Very first supporter, Mariella.
Thank you, Mariella.
You made our day. I mean, honestly, thank you so much for your monthly support.
Yes, Anchor emailed us.
So generous.
It was really exciting.
Right.
You never forget your first.
You never forget your first. Thanks for popping our sponsorship cherry. Nobody wants to admit they believe in ghosts.
There are just a lot of unanswered questions.
And most people would be like, I like how people react when they hear about our podcast.
We were right.
There are things back here.
I don't want milk. It was a miracle. We must explain it.
This is Elaine.
And Paula.
Welcome to
Wait, What?
So I'm kind of remastering like the old episodes.
Yeah.
I just... You know, I'm like, now I know audio a little bit, and so I could redo it. Uh-huh. And I just did our first one.
Yeah.
Our very first one. We were hype. Like, we were excited. We were drinking yerba mates at the time.
Yeah, that went on for a while.
And we shouted the names, like, three times. Wait, what? And we were, I'm like, Jesus Christ. I was like, I literally had to go through the audio and kind of, like, lower it a tad.
That's so funny because... We were nervous a little bit, and I remember feeling like, okay, this is recorded. It's no big deal. You're going to edit if anything goes wrong, and that, like, kind of opened me up thinking that. And then we just went right into our personalities.
Yeah, it was just so funny how hype we were. But if you powered through all three of those shouts, thank you for staying along. I was just like, Jesus, that's how our introduction, we break their eardrums.
I was like, what's the name of the show again?
But no, so I'm trying to do that. And I'm trying to organize it in such a way that, like, if you were looking for stories on aliens, you could search it. I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I'm...
Yeah, where they could still go... Like on the website, you mean?
Yeah, like how, you know, you can categorize it and tag it.
Yeah.
Like that.
I think that's very
cool. So maybe I'll just
And it's still
tags.
By number, like on Spotify and all that.
Oh, yeah,
right?
date.
But I mean, so. If people want, new listeners want to start at one and go all the way through, they can totally do that.
Mm-hmm.
I love, because then the alien enthusiasts can go straight to the alien
stories too.
Yeah,
right.
Or if you happen
to just catch on to one episode... And decided you want to listen to all the episodes that has that.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm just going to tag it in some way on the blog post.
Oh, yeah.
So that you could do it. So, and then I realized that our blog post goes to a Tumblr. Apparently, I opened a Tumblr account.
Well.
So... There's a new episode of Short and Scaries. It's going to be every Monday now.
Okay. Every Monday, Short and Scaries.
Yes. So you got your Friday new episode on, as a podcast. And then on YouTube, you have the Short and Scaries every Monday. And then whatever additional YouTube videos we want to make. But I do want to make that consistent. So that's happening.
So, nice.
Yeah. Anything else? Do we have anything?
No, we've got some... cool stories coming up from listeners. I don't want to give any details right now, but people contacting us or contacting someone who knows us even.
Yes.
And saying they've got scary stories they want to write up and send in, but we'll get detailed about that later.
And then also we are, I don't know if you'd listen, but the last episode we dedicated it to Gavin, and that's going to be a thing, you guys. You would be able to dedicate an episode to a family member, to yourself, because you're awesome and you deserve
it. Please, I would do it. Self-care.
Correct. So that's going to be on our website. DM us on any of our social medias or email us and let us know if you want to dedicate an episode. We will dedicate a whole episode to the person of your choice.
Yeah.
And, you know.
For low fee.
Exactly.
And there'll be a couple of tiers. You can dedicate an episode, or you can dedicate an episode, choose the story topic, a number of different things.
Have us, like, make up a funny birthday song. We are so not opposed to doing that.
I feel like I'm writing one in my head right now.
Exactly. And then speaking of which, also another way you could sponsor us is to sponsor us through a monthly pay on Anchor. You can see that on the link in our bio in the Instagram and TikTok. But we do have a supporter.
Yes.
Our very first supporter, Mariella.
Thank you, Mariella.
Mariella. You made our day. I mean, honestly, thank you so much for your monthly support.
Yes, Anchor emailed us.
So generous.
It was really exciting.
Right.
You never forget your first.
You never forget your first. Thanks for popping our sponsorship cherry. Mariella, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, I need a cigarette.
All right. Oh, that was good.
That was good. All right. Anything else?
No.
There's nothing going on. Aside from the fact that everybody wants to go to the beach all of a sudden.
Yeah, there are a lot of people. Well, it's insane. I looked at the weather across our county. So we're in Morro Bay, Los Osos, Morro Bay, where we record. Mm. And it's been hot for here. Well, we had a thunder. Okay, it all started with this thunderstorm a few days ago, mm-hmm. which was the, well, I won't talk about it. It was the day we had a party for Elaine. We'll talk more about that later.
Oh, yeah. It was a birthday party, yeah.
And the thunderstorm stopped for the party, which was outdoors. That was nice. But then the next 2 to 3 days, such high humidity.
Yeah.
I can't. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And in Morro Bay, it's usually in the 60s, which is so beautiful to sleep. And
so when it's like 80s, we're dying.
We're dying. Spoiled. And it's humid.
And it's humid. And
but
that was the
North
thing.
North County, where my sister lives, it's been getting up to, like, the high today is 108.
Ew.
Like, the numbers are in red on the Weather Channel app.
Ew. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing about that thunderstorm was it was not a cold thunderstorm.
No, it was hot.
It was hot and weird, like a tropical.
Yeah, yeah, it was like a
tropical
storm.
I'd never felt it like that ever. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy times with crazy weather.
Yeah.
So let's get down to more crazy, but fun crazy.
Fun crazy.
Fun crazy. Okay. Is it my turn?
I think you go first. Yeah. Okay.
So today I'm going to talk about what's something I'm surprised we haven't talked about is Atlantis. I mean, we did mention it because of the Theo. What was it? What was that chick's
the
thing?
Theosophist?
Theosophist, yeah. And about Atlantis, and that kind of interested me in it because, you know, in the kind of genre that we're in, Atlantis gets brought up, and I don't really know much about it. And
so this is like a focus on Atlantis.
Well, a focus. And
interesting.
Not only a focus, but also a theory of where it might be. And all this evidence, that's why I got so excited.
Is it underwater?
You just sit there and wait. Just sit there and wait. Because that was my thing. I was like, maybe it feels so fantastical.
Uh-huh.
Right? So anyways, let's get to it. So my sources are Mysteries of the Unknown, which is the Time Life book, and a YouTube channel called Bright Insight. And it's has a host named Jimmy, and he's my new favorite, I think.
Jimmy.
His name is Jimmy, and he's very knowledgeable without being actually, you know, like just knowledgeable and admits to where his theories might be lacking. And and also he's just good.
So it's a good discussion of the topic.
Yes,
okay.
He's cool. Our people.
Yeah.
He's our people.
I will listen to Jimmy.
So Bright Insight with host Jimmy, but
is
it's just
10?
Called Bright Insight. Huh?
Is he 10?
I know. It's so cute. Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy. Let me just pinch your cheek.
I know. He's like, hi, this is my theory about
Atlantis.
Oh, how cute.
Can I cookie?
I know. So the legend of Atlantis actually originates from the ancient Egyptians. A Greek lawmaker named Solon recorded the information when he visited Egypt, and the information was passed down through 6 generations, eventually ending up on Plato's plate.
That's where I first heard of it was
Plato.
With the Romans later.
Yeah, so Plato's plate. I'm just full of puns today. Sorry.
Wait, aren't those the Romans or no? Is
Plato
Greek?
Greek.
Oh, God, sorry. That's sorry, okay. Everyone,
whatever.
For showing my slip.
So Plato wrote about the long-lost island of Atlantis in his 2 famous dialogues, Timaeus and Critias. Sounds like riveting tales. He talks about, you know, how lush and fertile it was. It was abundant of mineral resources, had a lot of fruit, had an In-N-Out in every corner. Ugh, that's my utopia. He described it as a beautiful capital city known as Atlantis, and it was ringed with canals that separated wide bands of land filled with, you know, racetracks, gymnasiums, warehouses, harbors, blah, blah, blah. Scholars believe that Plato's account of Atlantis was fiction. It was an allegory or a myth to educate readers about ideal society, which happens to be one of his favorite things to talk about, ideal societies. But other people think it was a real actual place because the details was just a little too detailed. So I put here, Plato left some deets, as the kids would say, that some people think provide clues as to where Atlantis used to be. And the date of the island's destruction was one of the details. And it was actually estimated to have happened more than 9,000 years before Plato's time.
Oh.
And he said it was located beyond the Pillars of Hercules. So put a pin on that because we're going to go back to it. So interest in Atlantis resurged in 1882. There was a publication called Atlantis, the I don't know how to say this. Let me spell it. Antediluvian.
Antediluvian?
Sure.
It's hard. I'm trying to see the letters in my head.
Right. I'm seeing the letters and I can't say it. So props to you. Atlantis, the world by Ignatius Donnelly, who was a U.S. congressman and an amateur scientist. He wrote about Atlantis and he was kind of going off of Plato's story, but like he had more details. He said it was technologically sophisticated and that it was the mother of all known ancient civilizations, including Egyptians, Mayans, Mexicans, and Chinese, etc. And Donnelly says Atlantis sank in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean during the Great Flood mentioned in Ye Old Testament. So it got me wondering, is there a place that is close to Atlantis? Because people have been researching and looking at these details.
So are there like rock formations or something called the Pillars of Hercules?
It's coming. I know, I'm prepping you.
Okay.
This guy Jimmy from Bright Insight really just delves deep into it, and I think he found it in a 17-minute video, which is possible, you guys. We found the meaning of life 2 episodes ago.
Please.
So this is just everyday thing. So some of the locations for Atlantis has been proposed: the Andes, somewhere in Spain, Turkey, the Arctic, the Antarctic, the Mediterranean, Asia, you know. So any continent.
It has to be places that they would have known of.
Yes. So any continent or country kind of wants to be the Cinderella, right?
Yeah.
Whose glass slipper flits on their foot. But again, after this, I think we found our Cinderella. Okay. Strap on. So YouTube channel called Bright Insight had a video that was pretty damn convincing argument for the Rikat structure. It's called the Eye of the Sahara.
Okay.
Being Atlantis.
Oh, yeah. I have heard that.
It's a remote region of Northwest Africa in the country of Mauritania. And there are so many similarities to Plato's description, including the location. So when Plato wrote about it, he mentioned the king of Atlantis being Atlas, who was the firstborn son of Poseidon. So put a pin on that, Atlas. Now, the group of people, there used to be a group of people referred to as the Maori tribe, which are now known as the Berber people. And they inhabit a region in the north, in Northwest Africa, a region once referred to as Maori. And now it's called Maghreb, which is around Namibia, Morocco, West Algeria, and Mauritania, which was named after the Maori people. And if you look up the first king of Mauritania, he was named Atlas, legendary king of the Maori people. Now, Northwest Africa, how could it be? It's so remote. And we'll get into that.
Well, it's remote depending on your way of thinking, probably.
Oh, no, it's like Northwest Africa, but as far as like people thinking it's underwater.
Oh, yeah, right.
This is like remote desert. That kind of thing. So Northwest Africa, there's another kind of convincing argument that Northwest Africa being Atlantis came from Herodotus, who lived 2,500 years ago, Greek historian known as the father of history because he was like the first to collect material systematically, find sources, and arrange them in a well-constructed narrative. And he was famous for recording the Greco-Persian Wars. Now, he was born 75 years after Solon Selectus died. So he didn't meet Solon. And he died when Plato was just two. So nobody knew anybody. Okay. So died before Plato published the whole Atlantis thing. So Herodotus, one of his achievements was to develop, he developed one of the most accurate maps of the known world at the time,
okay,
450 BC. So when you look at this map, there's Italy, the Mediterranean Sea, mm-hmm, all the different continents, the Caspian, the Red Sea,
all
the Nile.
All the different continents?
Well, not all the different continents, but within this different...
With
like,
his world. With though. His world. Yeah, yeah, yeah. With-
the Nile Delta. And on the map, on the left, the word Atlantis, shown to be south of the Pillars of Hercules, which people now thinks are the Straits of Gibraltar.
Oh.
So the Straits of Gibraltar is known as the narrow strait that connects the Atlantic Ocean to the Mediterranean Sea and separates Gibraltar Peninsula, blah, blah, blah. Wikipedia. And it's positioned in Northwest Africa.
Okay.
So that's, he puts on the map, Atlantis.
Okay.
Okay. There's mountains on the map south of the Gibraltar, which are now known today as the Atlas Mountains.
Oh.
Home of the Berber people, named after Atlas, first king of Mauritania,
mm-hmm,
which happened to be in the same place that Herodotus put Atlantis.
Yeah.
So, and Atlantis literally means city of Atlas, the name of the king that founded him. Uh-huh. If you look up Atlas, it says he's the king of Mauritania. And that also happens to be where Herodotus put Atlantis on the map. Uh-huh. So, and he was not known for making, like, he's not Plato making stories. He's like, he's known for his ability to be like documenting things in vivid detail. So then there's the structure of it that's in Mauritania, the Rikat structure. This is where it gets interesting.
Okay.
So it's made of concentric circles. And I'll post this on our site.
Yeah, I'm interested.
The Rikat is these weird, it's a formation of circles.
Okay.
And it has the exact amount of rings that Plato said that Atlantis had. It has three of water and two of land. And it was the same size of how Atlantis was described. So Atlantis was described as 127 stadia, which actually one stadia equals 607 feet. And then it was 23 and a half kilometers, 14 miles across, which happens to be the same size.
Must be where we get the word stadium, yeah, which is the singular.
Stadia, right. So that happens to be the same size as the Rikat.
Oh, God. I mean, if we have a map and it describes it perfectly.
It has an opening on the south that matches the description of Atlantis connecting to the sea. And you can see it even from Google Maps, exactly where the mouth goes into the circle.
So how is this even a mystery?
I'll tell you the end of why people think it's not right.
Okay, okay.
So there's mountains to the north, and it contains rivers.
Okay.
The entire area surrounding the Rikat is a large level plain. And it said in the Plato's Atlantis was said to be steeped towards the sides of the sea. And the highlands at the Rikat center have a steep 1,500-foot drop.
Hmm.
The center island of the Rikat produces fresh spring water like Plato's Atlantis. And wells surrounding the area produce exclusively salt water, which is some evidence that the site was once under the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And the area around the Rikat, they found black, red, and white colored stone. Atlantis was also said to have an abundance of elephants, and we know elephants exist there today.
Mm-hmm.
And in the cave art that they'd seen close to the Rikat, there's cave art of elephants.
Mm-hmm.
They found pottery shards, arrowheads, and other evidence that a civilization once lived there, but archaeologists have no idea what civilization it was, who it belonged to, or when. All in Mauritania, whose king was Atlas, king of Atlantis.
Was there any evidence of advanced technology?
So they were saying that this particular spot was so, like, I mean, it's just basically a ring, and it's so dark. So all they found are pottery shards and arrowhead. But it's interesting that you bring that up, because they're saying that Atlantis advanced technology is what explains the Egyptians' advanced technology, as if it was some kind of, you know, it was passed down to them, because the Egyptians knew about Atlantis. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that it was probably possible that that knowledge went to the Egyptians, and that's why they have such high technology, and why some of these, you know, supposed ancient civilizations have such wonderful ways of building that we can't fathom today, you know, like Machu Picchu, and they're very straight, almost laser-like lines. So they're saying that it's because the technology of Atlantis spread out.
Okay, so maybe Atlantis is where the aliens landed.
Right, right. So he's saying this is Atlantis. But other people are like, it's 13 feet above sea level. How could it be Atlantis? But the scientific explanation for why the Rikot is there is that molten rock was pushed up towards the surface, but somehow didn't make it all the way, creating a dome of rock layers, like a very large pimple. And this also created fault lines circling, crossing the eye. Now, Plato says that an earthquake caused Atlantis to sink into the ocean.
Okay.
In a single day and night of misfortune, the island of Atlantis disappeared into the depths of the sea.
God, how tragic.
I know. And scientists say, with this Rikot, they said that it went through multiple processes of being lifted up and down, earthquake.
Yeah, or volcano.
And kind of creating, volcano, earthquake, creating these circles that we see today. But if you look at the circle, it's just so wonderfully perfect. And locals in the area has seen, there seems to be evidence that it was underwater at some point. Mm-hmm. Locals in the area have seen various fish skeletons in the Rikot.
Well, could part of it still be underwater?
No, it's so, I mean, if you look at, it's just desert.
Oh, it's just desert. It's over there.
Absolute desert. And most recently, they found whale bones in the desert of Mauritania. It was not fossilized. So, because for fossilized, it would take like a million years for bones to become fossils. Yeah, that's what scientists say. It takes more than a million years for bones to become fossils.
Okay.
So clearly, whatever these bones are, aren't fossils, and they found it in Mauritania.
Whoa.
Satellite images of potential structures on the ground also shows squares, as if something was built there, and it was like a foundation of some sort. Now, when they say remote, it's remote. It's not a tourist attraction. It's the middle of nowhere. The way that they're seeing these squares are from Google Maps.
Oh, my God. I wonder if they could do like sonograms or something. I don't know what all the technology is.
Yeah, and that's what he's trying to propose, because there has been the scientists who's actually made comments about Mauritania, some of them have never even been there. They're just kind of assuming things. And there hasn't been really I'm not going to say a pilgrimage, but let's get into that and examine that.
You think that archaeologists would want to do that?
You would think. But they just think, they have that explanation of it's molten lava, and that's how it was created. Mm-hmm. And I think some of them are just like, what's the point of going in there? And then some people say, too, since people are saying that, like, it's Atlantis, they don't want to look stupid. Oh, they're digging for Atlantis. You know, that kind of thing? So recent land survey of Mauritania found a massive river running through it. Mm. Maybe it could have been the Nile at some point. Then really the only question is the current elevation above sea levels. But Jimmy says he thinks it's time to delve into more about what's geologically possible during a certain length of time in regards to land movement. He suggests that the region of the Western Sahara was lifted by earthquakes and time somehow, not suggesting that at one point the ocean was 1,500 feet higher. Mm-hmm. That's his theory. And Life Science article says land lifting is possible. Antarctica is getting taller. It's rising because of the ice melting, causing some kind of sponge effect and reduced weight of the lost ice. But also there's a vicious mantle beneath, lots of and so that's saying
viscous, probably. Is it?
It says a flow of vicious mantle beneath, and there's 91 volcanoes underneath Antarctica's ice. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't know if they're active or not, but they're saying that that could contribute to the rise of land. And he's saying that's what happened to the Rikot.
Oh.
That not only earthquakes, but molten lava
raised
it to at a certain level.
And we know for a fact that happens.
Right.
But that is a geological phenomenon.
Right. So he's saying, you know, there's might be a volcanic anomaly, the Rikot structure, but these are all educated guesses because there's been no research, no visits really, and he's proposing that it should be excavated at some point.
Oh yeah.
So that's my story.
I mean, it just seems like whether they think it's Atlantis or not, that it would benefit archaeologists to go in there and see what civilization was there regardless.
And what kind of technology did they have? And it's just funny to me because it's like, you know, whenever I thought about Atlantis, it seemed like a fantastical place. It's underwater. La, 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 la.
Yeah.
But then like when I was reading, it's like, oh.
That was only step one.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, these are all good evidence of, and it's such a weird place, but you have to see a picture. Let me show you a quick picture of the Rikot. Okay. And Atlantis. Rikot structure, Atlantis. And it's like a side by side of how he describes it. Here we go. So here's the, I don't know if you can see. There's a couple of pictures.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So this one they kind of combine with how Atlantis was supposedly described.
Oh.
And how the Rikot
started. Yeah, so there's this roadway going into these concentric rings. There's
the mountains of Atlantis.
I mean, it almost looks from certain angles, it looks fluid, like, you know, when water is a whirlpool.
So this is what they're saying.
It's very interesting. I would love for someone to go in there.
This is according to Plato.
Yeah, 9,000 years ago or whenever.
That's what Atlantis looked like.
Ugh.
And with, you know, the king of, you know, Atlas and everything. I think it's a great argument.
I definitely want to know more. And I hope someone's interest is piqued who has access to that land.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. So, yeah, that's my story. Oh, I really got into that.
Atlantis
is a good
one. When I was a child, I'm still interested in Atlantis, but
as
a child, that was one of the things where I was like, oh, what? Yeah. There's a place?
I know. And, like, how cool, like, because we have so many movies about, you know, societies, dystopian. And I love to think of, like, utopias.
Yes.
Like, and so I think that's the fascination with Atlantis. It's just at one point people had it together, maybe. You know, maybe people had it together. And then the fact that
empires always fall.
I know. And that's the connection. That's what we're missing because we're always questioning this technology that because we haven't seen it and somehow it got lost, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That there's no way these people were able to build this because we can't even do it. But maybe this knowledge was lost.
Well, yeah. And there's that self-centered perspective in all regards.
Yeah.
History and technology and intellect where...
Just because
we're
not ever
going to know the truth if we can't get past our own
ego,
cultural ego.
Right. Because it's just like if we don't know it, that means it doesn't exist.
We can't do it. So they couldn't
do
it.
They couldn't do it.
Is that a logical?
Yeah.
Sounds like a fallacy.
I was actually talking to somebody about aliens and they didn't believe. They're like, even if there is aliens, I believe there's aliens. Why? How could they come visit? They might be too. They are too far. But by our perspective, by our technology, they're too far. How do you know they can't bend
200
time?
Years ago, San Francisco would have been too far from Los Angeles, what is now those places. I mean,
the thought of getting somewhere.
That doesn't make sense. You can't travel that fast on a horse.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
Okay, but what if they didn't use a horse?
Right.
Okay, that's nuts.
Or beyond five senses. If you talk about going beyond five senses, it's now absolutely crazy.
Like, nope.
Yeah, because I was discussing also quantum immortality and like somebody could not get over. Well, yeah, but what about free will? But like what free will? Okay, but let's push that aside really quick. Jesus
For
Christ.
A minute.
You're so married. Just calm down.
No one's trying to split you up
from
your belief.
I know, it's just a thought that maybe we're all living these parallel lives. We just can't.
They're like, no.
It's just but we're here. This is our reality. Now, how come I don't know about my reality over there? It's so linear. Like, you can't think of this in a linear sense. Mm-hmm. But that's how we, I guess, are sane.
You know, every once in a while, this is a different subject, but every once in a while when I listen to our podcast once, Elaine posts it because I like to listen to it edited, which is barely edited. But like, I like to listen it from the perspective of our listeners.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes. Since Joseph Stone author has these books where we're characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said his audio person, the person reading the books for the audio versions.
Yeah.
Like, has nailed my voice. And sometimes I listen to me and I'm thinking, is that what she's doing? Or is that what she's doing? Or like,
I got to listen to the audio now.
Curious, and there's nothing she could do that I would consider wrong.
No,
I'd just be like, oh, that's the essence that she's here. Like, right. It's just such a curiosity for me.
Well, he had to tell her, like, you need to listen to the show. You'll get the nuances of our personalities.
Yes.
And then he goes, I know she did, because when she came back and read.
Yes.
She got you guys.
Ugh.
And it's like, oh.
It's going to be so good.
I know. So, yeah, that's Joseph Stone author. He commented on a couple of posts, but if you guys want to follow him, he's a wonderful, great, intelligent writer.
And these books are a trilogy, I think.
So there's a series. I think he's getting into werewolves now, and there's a few. So wait, let me look it up really quick.
My kind of author, because the ones are, it's like the Ghosts of Cambria or something like that.
Yeah, author josephstone.com. You guys, author josephstone.com. Paranormal genres. He does mystery and crime. He does dark romance. He does science fiction. He does historical romance. Mm. So we're in this series. Yeah, Ghost of Cambria. We're in the dark romance series. Damn, Joseph, you write fast.
God damn.
He has so many books. It's absolutely crazy.
That's how I say that. Tell your reader, God damn.
God damn. God damn.
And then Paula said in a sultry tone, God damn.
God damn. The first book I read from Joey was historical romance, The Ornaments of Love. Very, very good.
Hanging between his legs. Those are the ornaments of love.
The ornaments of love. Sorry for ruining it.
It's just balls.
It's just balls. So what you got?
Okay, so did you hear about the damage to the Arecibo Observatory in Puerto Rico? Did you hear about it?
No.
Oh, there's this damage. Okay, so here's what happened.
Okay.
So this observatory, which is set up to detect, you know, they're into the exploration of, you know, intergalactic beings, aliens. And it was made famous in the movie Contact, and there was movie too. Contact with Jodie Foster and Jenna Malone.
Yes. Go ahead.
And the father I always have a crush on, but I can never remember his name. And Matthew McConaughey.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry. I don't know. He's just so pervy to me.
He is?
He has this energy that is so much of a turnoff. He stars in great movies. He's a good actor. He speaks on issues in a way that I believe.
Good daddy. Is he? Good husband.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just get a really weird vibe from him.
Hey, live your life.
I mean, there's probably a little bit of that.
He sometimes plays off of his character that was really famous.
Yeah.
The first character was Dazed and Confused.
No, I haven't seen that movie.
Okay.
No, it's something from him. Not the characters.
I get it.
I don't know when he's in interviews. I just feel like, ugh.
Really?
Yes.
I get like that, and it's not pervy. I get like arrogant vibes from like everybody loves Justin Timberlake, and in all aspects, I feel like I should like him too because he's funny.
He's legitimately funny when he's on Saturday Night Live.
Very talented.
There's something off there too.
But there's something about him that I'm like,
I just don't know. Yeah, there's something. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's something definitely off with Justin Timberlake. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
There are a few people like that.
And the Arecibo, going back to your topic, and not about
that I haven't
men.
Even started before.
The Arecibo also was the one that Carl Sagan sent out that message into space replied by aliens via a binary code, which actually I posted on our TikTok. And somebody MIT did a thing where they were going to do a crop circle to see if they could match it and see how long it takes, because it appeared overnight.
Uh-huh.
It was huge, 104 feet long, 74 feet wide, whatever. And it had binary code, just like the message that the Arecibo sent out. And it took like 30 hours to do. And there was also changes in the radiation
that's around cool, the though.
Crops. But somebody on TikTok said, oh, yeah, I don't know much about crop circles, but I think me and a team of five people could do that in 5 hours. And so my response to that
when
was...
When you start your...
Okay.
Well, when you start your statement with, I don't know what I'm talking about, but here's the conclusion I've drawn.
And also, MIT did it, actually did it with 30 fucking people and couldn't do it in... Not even close to 5 hours, but you and a team of 10 people could do.
We send that guy out with his team of 10, and it's going to be like, nailed it. And right. It's just going to look like a big, messy cornfield.
Right? I'm like, you can do binary code. 70 feet, 104 feet long.
Yeah. How hard can it be?
With five people.
I had not.
And so I didn't know how to respond to that. So I said, okay, and put a thumbs up. Get the fuck out of
here. I think that's the best response.
I just don't even know.
You're not even worthy of a sentence.
I just like, okay, sorry, Arecibo.
No, I'm glad that the name of my topic inspired you.
I'm just mad that we haven't responded back to them. We ghosted aliens. We left them on red.
We ghosted aliens.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Arecibo Observatory, Puerto Rico, set up to investigate extraterrestrial life, though it's made a number of scientific discoveries beyond that, regarding pulsars and things mm-hmm. like that, made famous in Contact. Mm-hmm. And unexpectedly, Arecibo's radio telescope suffered major damage when a cable snapped. And this was on August 10th.
Oh, so recently.
Yeah, very recently.
Very recently.
Yeah, this huge cable snapped and tore through some of the...
Just out of nowhere it snapped?
Out of nowhere.
So nothing
They're investigating it.
Okay.
But it was installed. Oh, I'll get to the part of when it was installed. But they expected it to have, because, you know, they check these things. They expected it to have another 15 to 20 years before they needed to look at replacing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it snapped. I mean, and these aren't like bungee cords, you know? Like these are like Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, like,
hold up the thing.
Yeah.
Massive, like intertwining.
Wow.
Yeah.
And who's around there? Like, I mean, obviously nobody snapped it, but like, what could have possibly done that?
I don't know. That's crazy. And they don't know yet.
It's not corrosion.
Well, no. I mean, unless they actually never check the structure.
There's some guy there every night sawing it.
Yeah, some little monkey chewing on the wires.
Don't send any more nudes to the aliens.
So space.com, it was reported all over the place, mm-hmm. but space.com wrote that on Monday, August 10th, an auxiliary cable supporting a platform that is suspended above the 1,000-foot-wide 300-meters radio dish broke and crashed into the telescope's reflector panels.
Mm.
That created a gash in the dish measuring about 100 feet long.
Ooh, that's going to leave a mark.
No, it's huge. In a news conference with reporters, Arecibo director Francisco Cordova said that 250 of the observatory's primary reflector dish panels were damaged, along with several support cables underneath the dish. But observatory officials have not yet fully assessed the extent of the damage or determined the cost of repairs. It's a 56-year-old radio telescope, once the largest single radio dish on Earth.
Mm.
And yeah, so now they are investigating. But Cordova said that the auxiliary cable was designed to last, just like I said, another 15 to 20 years. So it's not clear why it failed.
Huh.
It was one of several auxiliary cables that were added to the observatory in the 1990s to help support a new addition to the telescope called the Gregorian Dome that houses an antenna receiver on the platform. About 6 to 8 panels on the Gregorian Dome had been damaged by the broken cable, and they said that the platform used to access the dome was left slightly twisted, but it's not yet clear if the instruments inside the dome have been affected. So they're still checking everything out. No one was injured when the accident happened at approximately 2:45 a.m. Eastern. What's EDT? Eastern.
I don't know.
Dada time.
Dada.
don't know the time.
I don't know.
Don't know the time. On Monday, as facility was closed, I just feel like someone's going to get mad. Sorry for sounding dumb.
What?
Making fun of dumb people. Because people, it's like the R word and things like that.
I don't think that's our audience anymore.
You don't think it's our
audience? They left a year ago. These people that are still listening
That we're nice people and we just like to make fun of
everything. Exactly, and they do too.
But if the cable had been snapped during the daytime with staff working on the site, then employees would have been injured. So the fact that it was the middle of the night was good. The observatory has been shut down indefinitely until the telescope can be repaired. And that made me wonder. I thought, how interesting that this cable that was in good condition snapped. And now the telescope is shut down indefinitely. So I was like, what else might have happened on August 10th?
Ooh, I love it. Paula Sleuth, the Cambridge. Well, it's kind of like what happened with the Atlantis thing. Like, I just don't want to talk about Atlantis. Do we actually happen to find Atlantis?
Yeah, yeah.
And who? There you go. We did it. Well, I think we did it. I think Jimmy did it. Jimmy did it. But I'll go ahead and take credit.
But we're followers of Jimmy. Right? Jimmy.
Jimmy. Yeah, right. Right, Mariella. Am I saying it right?
I'm saying it like Italian, but it's probably Spanish.
Mariella. Yeah, that is Italian. Oh.
Mariella.
That accent.
Mariella. So on volcanodiscovery.com, there were a number of earthquakes reported, but there are earthquakes reported every single day across the world. So that in its own, there are three quakes, 5.0 or above, 23 quakes, 4.0. And I was like, okay, 343 quakes total. And that's still actually normal. It doesn't feel normal to us. Most of them are undetected. Right. They're all over the world. But then I saw this article in the Los Angeles Times that reported on August 10th that a swarm of Salton Sea earthquakes is sparking worry about the San Andreas Fault.
Oh, fuck.
And I just thought, God, I don't know how it would be related, but that's the writer's name, Ronggong Lin, if I'm saying that right, staff writer for the Times. Let's see. August 10th, a swarm of small earthquakes in California close to the Mexican border is being closely monitored as to whether it might raise the chance of a much larger event on the San Andreas Fault. Mm. The largest earthquake on Monday was magnitude 4.6 reported at 8:56 a.m. under the southeastern part of the Salton Sea, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. It was among a series that began at 6:33 a.m. with a magnitude 3.2. Then magnitude 4 quakes struck at 9:03 and 12:29. And it's significant because the swarm of earthquakes, this is only the fourth time in 88 years of modern records that such a swarm has occurred in this part of California. And that's a region that, for that to happen in that region, raises concern among seismologists or earthquake scientists for the chance that it can trigger a significant earthquake on that fault.
No.
I know. And that's like, it was reported on August 10th. So it's just in that area leading up.
Yeah. So you think maybe an earthquake caused it?
Well, no, I don't know. But there are other things like alien sightings were higher than usual. Like, it's just this whole thing.
Dude, can you imagine aliens like, you know what? You don't want to answer our texts?
I know.
Fuck you guys then.
Boom. Bing. Try to text me now.
What happened? We just send you our news.
I guess we're going to go to the observatory and, you know, whatever place.
Oh, my God.
The San Andreas Fault southernmost stretch has not ruptured since 1680 to 1690. Big earthquakes on this section of the Southern Andreas Fault rupture on an average of every 250 years. Mm. Although there can be wide variations as to how often they actually occur. I mean, that's the thing with earthquake science. They don't.
It's shaky.
It's just very. Ugh. No, I will not allow that. No puns. Ugh.
I'm pun heavy today.
Don't you pun.
Don't you
pun no more. In general, there's a 20% chance of magnitude 7 or larger quake on that part of the fault. The last time a similar swarm happened was nearly 4 years ago. That series of moderate quakes, the worst of which were, okay, we don't need to know the magnitude of all of them. But Monday's swarm does increase the chance of a big earthquake on the San Andreas somewhat, said USGS research geophysicist Morgan Page. So it's definitely something to watch.
I don't like...
So that's unusual.
The words earthquake and swarm together. I know. Swarm is bad enough. A swarm of anything feels ominous, but a swarm of earthquakes, I just...
Oh my God. We lived in Sunnyvale during the Loma Prieta quake, which was so huge.
What
that's
year
the
was
one.
That? The 80s?
Yeah, like 89? I want to say 89.
Okay, I know which one that was.
Well, and that's the one that collapsed part of the Oakland Bay Bridge and
right,
all that.
Right.
It was just horrible. But yeah. We're in Sunnyvale, which is about an hour-ish south of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. But it was really strong across the whole San Francisco Bay Area. And it was for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Of aftershocks.
That we were having aftershocks.
Ugh.
And it was the weirdest thing because the car alarms go off.
Yes.
No, first the birds. Like, I remember walking down the street and the birds all... flocked from the tree, like flew from the tree. And I was like, what? And with like a moment later, the car alarms are going off. And then a moment after that, you can feel the earthquake. So it's like, God damn, like it's so weird to have these, these signs and still there's nothing you can do.
No, there's nothing.
And the aftershocks were really strong too.
Nature's like, I'm going to play Jenga real quick. So
and we're just like, okay, well, we'll do our best.
I know, right? And we'll hang on.
Oh, God. That was scary.
I know. I think for me, the aftershocks are scarier than the actual earthquake because I feel like the earthquake came out of nowhere. Whoa, it's an earthquake. Okay, it stopped. Mm. But now you're anticipating and the anticipating of the aftershocks I feel like it's worse. And then when there is an aftershock, you're like, is this going to get harder?
Well, because the aftershocks, if they had happened by themselves, were really big earthquakes.
Correct.
But that initial one, which was
started,
like 7.1, really big on the Richter scale. And, you know, we couldn't call out because the lines are flooded.
Yeah. Ugh.
I think the original one was the scariest, though, because you couldn't stay on your feet. Like, you couldn't stand.
Yeah.
It was so strong.
Yeah. Ugh. Ugh.
Oh, man.
Crazy.
And I had two babies, and my husband went climbing out the window with our littlest baby
because
he was from Michigan and he had never been trained.
I know. Like, you don't climb out the window.
Get in the goddamn doorway under a heavy piece of furniture.
Right.
No, he's climbing out the window with the baby and running down the street.
No.
I mean, he was doing his best. He was trying to save... I guess the baby. He was letting me and the other baby die. But.
Bye.
See ya. Going back to Michigan now.
That's why we only had two. You can get one. Go.
Door jam or under a table. I always tell my girls.
I think they say don't do doorways anymore, but that time it was still believed.
Why?
I don't know why.
Because that's where the supports
supposedly
are.
I don't know why.
I think that's better than just standing there.
Oh, well, yeah, if it's between that and jumping into the heart of the storm. But I think...
I'm going to look up door jam.
I think... Yeah, look it up. Heavy pieces of furniture is better. I can't remember what the thing was. Well, when we were living in Michigan, they were going over emergency preparedness in the schools. And my daughter, Laura, during an earthquake, they're like, what should you have in your earthquake kit? And they're like candles. And I was like, okay, never fucking candles. If a gas line breaks and you blow yourself up,
and
like, no, don't.
Get a
people
match
from Michigan.
All, psh, psh,
psh. Yeah, people from Michigan shouldn't be teaching about earthquakes. All right. In the South China Morning Post, they reported that a volcano erupted that day. Indonesian Cinnabung, and I'm probably saying, I want to say Cinnabung.
I know, me too.
But it's like Cinnabung. Volcano erupted, dumping ash on surrounding villages. Indonesia's Mount Cinnabung erupted on August 10th. The volcano on Sumatra Island belched a massive column of ash and smoke 5 kilometers into the air and plunged local communities into darkness as a thick layer of debris fell. And that volcano has been active for a number of years already. So I mean, like, there are all these things happening. The Express.co.uk reported on that same day,
let's see, a major UFO sighting over Denver, Colorado. Huh? In photos, there's a circular object in an otherwise clear blue sky.
Did I see this on TikTok? I think somebody posted something on TikTok.
Oh, they did?
Denver.
It's just this circle. Now, later, the FAA...
Oh, of course.
...said that was basically a weather balloon. They said, and I was like, are we still using weather balloons? They actually used the term weather balloon, and they said it was... associated with Google putting their high altitude,
like Roswell,
like to boost
again.
Wi-Fi signals, except it was like in this parachute coming down. Like it didn't quite make sense. I mean, they must have been leaving something out.
I just feel like that kind of like as technology savvy as we are,
yeah,
to be using balloons or parachutes of any sort,
it just didn't seem
very
likely.
Like, hey, you know what we should do? We should act like we're in the 1900s.
Yeah, it was a weather balloon.
You know what would be really fun with this research? Make it harder than it should be. Like, I just don't think weather balloon. That old excuse.
I just can't believe.
It's a weather balloon.
No, they said, Google
high
altitude.
Did it look like a weather balloon?
I mean, it looked like a giant parachute in the secondary pictures, okay. But by then I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it wasn't an alien. I don't know that for sure.
Yeah.
But it's just weird. And maybe they want to give it. Remember, we were talking about communication.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're going to have something that looks like an alien spacecraft.
Tell people that we're going to be sending out.
Yeah. Just heads up, everybody. It's not a UFO. It's an IFO, identified flying object.
And I think it would help narrow down what's unidentified and identified if you just let us
just identify
know.
It if you already know, like,
good God,
no, after the fact I don't believe
it's
you.
Like when they so whatever.
And then on MUFON, UFO sightings were up 49% last week, which was a total
really?
69 sightings reported. And just for context, they were down 2% last month, 479 sightings reported, and up 0% over the last year, 5,837 sightings reported. So the fact that it was up 49% last week is significant.
Oh.
So it just is interesting.
It is. And then the Arecibo.
I know.
This
is on the same day that was damaged. The observatory radio telescope was damaged.
What the shit?
So it's like, well, I'm not saying something did happen beyond just a cable wearing out unexpectedly.
But what if they decided to like try and communicate with us? Because obviously that's a popular spot for some reason.
Yeah.
They're like, oh shit, we fucked up. Bye.
Uh-oh, you broke it.
You broke it. God damn it, it's the temp. Let's not hire from the temp agency again. Jesus.
God damn it, we're taking
job.
You back to Pluto.
I know. Oh my gosh, that's interesting.
I know.
That, oh boy.
Okay, so these.
What if like the aliens are like really interested in what's going on right now, and all the other alien species are like, what are you guys binging on? Oh, did you go to planet Earth? Some
it's
crazy
like,
shit
oh my God,
happening.
All we had to do was damage a few reflectors and that's all they're talking
all
about
they're talking
so
about.
We've been like driving through,
and there's like a pandemic and they're all freaking out about that too. Let's go.
It's
watch
hilarious,
like popping popcorn and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they eat popcorn.
Totally.
So some of the sightings on that day, one guy from Great Falls, Montana, said, I drove from Spokane to Great Falls and arrived approximately 4 p.m. Mountain Time. My sister and I saw what appeared to be stars on a bright, sunny day. The lights then moved to an airplane flying very high in the sky over Malmstrom Air Force Base. After seeing this, I obtained binoculars and observed 4 or 5 bright lights changing colors and moving around the plane. The lights were extremely close to this large jet at 40,000 plus altitude. The plane was going from east toward the west, and I observed this for about 15 minutes until I lost sight of the plane. I did not give my sister's information for her privacy. Oh, because he's reporting this to MUFON.
Yeah.
Oh, in Miami, Florida. You're getting closer to Puerto Rico now. Three stationary orbs over Miami orbiting each other. I'm an instrument rated pilot. While on my morning walk in Naples, Florida, I observed what appeared to be one object which split into 3 orbs. The objects flashed orange, green, red, and white. The object initially appeared as a single object. From my position, the object
he says object a lot, was southeast of my position in the direction of Miami. Due to the slant of the object from my location, it appeared to be either high altitude over Miami or between Miami and Naples. Uh-huh. Let me go down a little bit. But he's watching this for a long time. Venus was clearly visible. The object was to the south and east of Venus. And at one point I saw a satellite move overhead in a straight easterly direction, which is so he's emphasizing that he knows the difference between a satellite and other flying.
So he knows what he's looking at, he's saying.
He's saying, yeah. I initially thought it was one object until I could see three, which would rotate or orbit around each other at times. Mm-hmm. I could see the objects were dark, spherical. So all of this, and then they were being reported across the world in Jakarta, Indonesia, Albany, New York, Deer Park, Washington, Tillamook, Oregon, Seaford, England, Eastern Pennsylvania, and Trenton, Tennessee. So like all this stuff.
Dude.
And then here's a funny aside.
Okay.
I don't know if I ever mentioned this on this show, but August 10th, I was with my sister that day because we were swimming in her neighbor's pool because she was kind of doing a... She was watering their plants. And August 10th is also the birthday of our biological father, who he died some years ago, like 30 years ago, maybe. And he was one of the suspects for the Zodiac killings, the Zodiac murder.
Okay. Have why I not mentioned have you that? Been hiding this?
Because it's so weird.
Are
and
you
then I was like,
serious?
No, I don't think it was a main suspect, but he's listed. I even went, we already knew that, but I went on this Zodiac Killer site where everyone likes to talk and they're putting the puzzle together all the time. And it's weird. His name's there. His high school picture is there. Because we're talking about him as one of the suspects.
What?
I don't know how he was. I mean, he was a shady character. Both my parents are, you know, not all together. So,
oh my God, we have to write to my favorite murder now. What it was called. I cannot believe that your biological dad was looked at as a suspect.
Yeah. And they think there were copycat killers out there too. And it was just, I don't know. There were a lot of suspects. When he died, we found in his safety deposit box all these Polaroids of women wearing the same negligee and stuff. Like he was absolutely a sociopath.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we got these parents, but we had all these people. It was like,
but you also had a great stepdad who was actually your dad.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean?
No, my mom married outside of the first one. She married nice men.
Yeah, yeah.
But
he was just a sperm donor.
Yeah,
not a real.
And my mom was just the. Whatever.
The vessel.
Yeah.
Anything else that happened that day?
No. I mean, I'm sure there was more, but that's what
but the earthquakes and the alien, especially the UFO
higher
sightings.
Higher than usual alien reports
and,
is interesting because
swarm of earthquakes.
That machinery that detects them was damaged.
Went, it's too much.
Although there are plenty of observatories in the world and they didn't all break down.
But maybe they got close to that particular...
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe like you said, maybe it was an accident. Maybe they were trying. It's like, just really funny.
They're like, did they get our message? We sent it. They never responded.
I just feel like, are you ghost? Are you upset?
I know, right? Was it something wrong? Was it something we said?
I just wish they'd bounce back so I knew if something went wrong. That's how I feel about text. Like when people don't take text.
Yeah, yeah.
It just goes, you think you've sent a text
ether.
And that's the end of it. Yeah. Yeah, like if you accidentally send it to a landline, that's just where
that's where it goes.
It doesn't say, oh, no, you sent it to a landline.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, shit, let me.
Exactly.
Nope,
isn't that funny?
It just feels like people aren't answering
the
you.
Landline just ate it.
Yeah.
And that's why I try to answer texts quickly because I do miss texts. And when I miss texts, it's like, oh, I'm sure they understand I can't answer a text right away. But when somebody doesn't answer my text right away.
You wonder what's going on.
I go, oh, but usually they're pretty good at answering
like,
back.
Are they upset? Because sometimes you do go hiking somewhere and you can't answer.
Yeah.
Or my phone.
Or driving.
Driving. My phone's on its last legs and something happens where I have to empty the cache.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it just won't.
like bring me the text people yeah. are sending. So when I empty it, and all of a sudden 20 appear, and people are like, so
oh, for I'm like, real?
Oh my God. Ugh, yeah.
That sucks.
Well, it sucks because we just assume the worst.
Yeah, we do. We do assume the worst. Like, well, God, I threw out that idea and I got no response. Yeah. Like, what the hell? Uh-huh. Or it sucks when it's just like, if it was anything heartfelt or an apology.
Oh, I know. And I'm like, oh shit, that sat in there. I know, and it's like by the third one, my sister's like, are you okay, Pooley?
Ooh,
and I'm like, oh my God.
That sucks.
Yes. So like sometimes the calls won't come through either.
Oh no.
No, it's shit. Extra awful because my sister would just call and be like, so what the fuck's up?
I yeah. know, right, right. Oh, that kind of, mm-hmm. you need to get a better phone before you go hiking or anything.
Well, and I'm going to order the Google Pixel 4a when it comes out.
Oh, good. Because it's like, that's another thing too. Like when I go walking, and yeah. Mind you, I go walking places where it's pretty populated or whatever. Yeah. But when I did go to Valencia Peak at one point, I went early and there was like nobody. Yeah. And it was like one of the first times I had went. And I remember texting Debbie and I was like, if I lose connection, this is where I am, blah, blah, blah.
No, that's smart.
And it's just funny, though, because one of our coworkers is going on like a 5-day hike.
Yes, I heard that.
And she, we were talking about what she was packing or whatever. I'm like, please tell me you have a knife, a pepper spray.
I know she has a knife.
She does have a knife.
Does she have pepper spray?
She was like, and then.
No, I just want her to be.
Get pepper it's better, spray.
I know she's concerned about the weight of everything because she's an ultra low
yeah.
weight but you hiker. Need, but
there's one you could put on your fist and just pss, like that.
Yeah, I just would rather her have a little too much than not enough.
Yeah, no, you have to have pepper spray. I love a world where we could just go hiking and nothing happens.
But you need to be prepared.
But there's animals. There's psychopaths.
Yes.
That know. Oh, look, a girl's going into a trail all by herself. Oh. Let me go ahead of her.
Oh, ultra low weight. They don't bring enough.
Exactly. Like, ugh, no. I've listened.
I know. It makes me nervous.
It makes me nervous, too. But I mean, I would be all so.
No, the hike, she's all over it. Like, I don't feel like there's anything about the physicality of it.
No, it's just
to be prepared if some idiot comes out of the woods.
And just it's just so remote. And we know, I mean, we've done stories where people just fucking disappear with no trace.
Absolutely.
Like, come on. At least have a flare to stick up an alien's butt if it tries to abduct you.
It's hard to get that placement. Okay, let's just be honest.
I know.
It's hard. But if you have a flare, you have a chance.
You can stick it in their big ol' eye. Their big ol'
eye. Big ol' eye.
So what were you saying?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, folks, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And what was her name again?
Mariela.
Mariela. Thank you. This episode's dedicated to you, baby.
Hey, Mariela.
All right.
Bye.
Till next time. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Wait, What?
And remember, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and you've got to meet our intern, Sarah. She's all over TikTok.
And you can find all this on our website on waitwhatpodcast.com with 3 A's.